You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And moving on, let's talk about DJI, the massive drone maker. This is actually one of two stories we'll be talking about for DJI, because over 80,000 drone IDs were exposed in a data leak after a database containing information from dozens of airspace monitoring devices manufactured by the Chinese-owned DJI were left accessible to the public. Now, recently, the Cyber News research team stumbled upon an unprotected database with over 90 million drone monitoring logs generated by DJI devices. They are the largest maker or largest player in the world, for the record, for drones. And so obviously that's a huge thing. There is a drone ID system out there that has been exposed. So if you have a DJI drone, somebody might have gotten that information to see where you're flying that thing. Obviously not cool. And finally, and we have a couple finalies, actually three finalies, I believe, for you today. The first one we're going to be talking about is the country of Iran. And the reason being is that several hacktivist groups have been using Telegram and other tools to aid anti-government protests in Iran to bypass regime censorship restrictions amid ongoing unrest after the death of Mahsa Amini, in basically when she was in custody by the police. I've talked about that on my radio show and in podcast video form as well. I think everybody knows the story by now. Quote, key activities are data leaking and selling, including officials' phone numbers and emails and maps of sensitive locations. That is according to Israeli cybersecurity firm Checkpoint that has been monitoring and researching this. Now, Checkpoint said that it also witnessed the sharing of proxies and OpenVPN servers to get around censorship and reports on the internet status of the country, with one group helping the anti-government demonstrators access social media sites. Chief among them is a Telegram channel called Official Atlas Intelligence Group, or AIG, that's primarily focused on publishing data associated with the government and their officials, as well as maps of prominent locations in Iran as well. Calling itself a cyber army, the group is said to have commenced operations in May and also advertised a wide range of services in the past, such as data leaks, DDoS attacks, and remote access to organizations. They've also known to voluntarily hunt and dox pedophiles as well, which I'm assuming nobody is complaining about. So basically, the dissidents in Iran right now that are risking life and limb to essentially go against the theocratic government there are getting some assists from around the globe. Quite frankly, I think the vast majority of the planet wishes them well. Moving on, let's talk about major U.S. airport websites. And this is interesting because I don't think it really affected much. Nevertheless, I want to talk about this as one of my finalies, because a pro-Russian hacking group claimed credit for cyber attacks hitting more than a dozen U.S. airport websites this past Monday morning, according to multiple outlets, temporarily rendering parts of the sites inaccessible to the public, though the hacking did not result in any operational disruptions, meaning there were no delays in flights because an airport's website went down. Now, responsibility for the attack was basically the hacking group Killnet, which has basically promoted Kremlin viewpoints and previously engaged in cyber attacks targeting Western nations, but whose ties to the Russian government are unknown. That's according to CNN. Now, the airports targeted included Atlanta's Hartsfield Jackson, one of the largest in the world, New York's LaGuardia, Chicago O'Hare, as well as LAX and Los Angeles were also appeared to be affected, according to multiple outlets. Now, the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, or CISA, Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, said that Monday that it was monitoring the situation, but there were no more concerns about airport operations. In a post on Telegram, the group also claimed to hit airports in Idaho, Michigan, Hawaii, Massachusetts, and other states. Killnet also claimed responsibility last week for disrupting state government websites in Colorado, Kentucky, and Mississippi, as well as other states as well. And the interesting part about this one is, I think, who goes to an airport website? I can think the only time I've probably been to an airport website is if I've never been to the airport before, I'm just looking up, do they have like an Admirals Club or a United Club or something like that where I can sit and work as I'm waiting for my flight, because I do that quite a bit and I travel a lot, as you probably know. But other than that, I have zero reason to go to the website. That would not prevent me. If O'Hare, Chicago O'Hare, which is my main airport, like their website goes down, I would never know it. It would not affect my day. Now, if American goes down or United goes down or Delta goes down or the airport itself is knocked out, that's a huge problem, because now you're talking about total stoppage of air traffic and then we're all screwed. So there you go. If an O'Hare or a Hartsfield Jackson goes out, it screws up basically the entire nation, because these airports are hubs. Huge thing. I don't know what an airport in Idaho would necessarily do beyond local or regional traffic, but man, an O'Hare, an LAX, a Hartsfield Jackson, those are huge airports. And so if their websites go down, it really doesn't affect anything, but hopefully the airports themselves continue to stay up, and they are so far. And finally, we have to talk once again about Wi-Fi drones, and this one is actually a really interesting revolution in hacking technique. Now, basically, the attackers have a new attack vector that they've been toying with over the last couple of years, and that is drone penetration kits. Now, drones have become more capable in the last several years, making them a viable option for covertly placing intrusion equipment near a network. Just basically, it was originally a theoretical field for research, but now these things are being found in the wild. This week, interestingly enough, the Register reported on a drone attack that happened over the summer. The compromised private investment firm kept this quiet, but agreed to speak basically off the record, meaning we don't know who this company was, but this is nuts. Here's what happened, and it's both impressive and terrifying at the same time. Network administrators discovered that their company's internal Confluence page was exhibiting strange behavior within their local area network, meaning in their office building. Confluence, if you didn't know, is a web-based remote collaboration software that's developed by Atlassian. Now, while investigating this incident, security personnel discovered two drones on the roof of their building. One was a, quote, modified DJI Matrice 600, and the other one was a modified DJI Phantom. Now, the Matrix or Matrice had actually crashed, but was still operational, and the Phantom had landed safely. Now, the Matrice was outfitted with a penetration or pen testing kit consisting of a Raspberry Pi, a GDP mini laptop, a 4G modem, a Wi-Fi device, and several batteries. The Phantom carried basically all of this there up to the roof, and here we are. Now, security researcher Greg Linares, who spoke to basically to the firm's IT team, said that these threat actors used the Phantom a few days before basically the attack to intercept an employee's credentials and Wi-Fi, meaning they knew the Wi-Fi password going in because they were able to capture that preliminarily using a drone. They obviously then did their homework. They coded everything into the stolen information and the penetration equipment and then launched them out. Now, the Matrice drone compromised the company's Confluence page from the roof by using the employee's Mac or machine access code, address and access credentials. They then poked around the Confluence logs, attempting to steal more logins to connect to another internal devices, but they had limited success, according to the report. Now, the admins knew the network was under attack when they noticed the compromised employee's MAC address was logged in locally, but also from his home several miles away. The security team isolated the Wi-Fi signal and then used a fluke tester and then basically located these things on the roof. Linares also said that a third drone-based cyber attack he has seen in the last 2 years. This is the third drone-based attack he's seen, but obviously this attack vector still needs some work. The only reason this one had success basically was that the company was on a temporary network that wasn't fully secure. So they literally flew basically these drones with mini laptops, Wi-Fi equipment and a 4G modem so they could communicate back, essentially on this network, landed on top of the building, hacked into the network using stolen credentials, and were able to gain access to that. That is pretty impressive. Now, obviously, that also means it's a local attack. So if it was sitting here in Chicago, nobody's launching a drone from Moscow, you know, they're going to be in the area. But that said, drone ranges are very impressive these days. And from what I understand, they can go miles and miles away from, you know, their base, the person that is controlling them. So this is obviously a very huge thing. They could be in a 3 mile radius for all we know. So it's a very interesting technique. We're going to see where that goes. This was an absolutely crazy breaches of the week. We're about 30 minutes into this video / podcast / radio broadcast. So there you go. Were you affected? Let me know. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is actually on the next privacy nightmare that we all have to worry about, and that is virtual reality. And there's probably no doubt that by now, pretty much everybody, especially if you're listening to this, knows that the metaverse is trying to be the next big thing. Facebook, which changed its name to Meta to basically reflect its huge push into building the metaverse, is actually only one of a multitude of companies trying to build virtual worlds for us to work in, play in, and spend much of our life. And for the record, I do believe that Facebook changed their name to Meta in a rush because they were also trying to deflect from a whistleblower that basically showed them how they were essentially destroying our lives through depression, everything else, especially our teenage children. So that obviously is a huge, huge thing. But I digress because we are talking about virtual reality in the metaverse. In other words, Facebook, for the record, because there's a multitude of these companies, isn't the only game in town, but they are currently the biggest game in town, despite the fact that they've had problems with glitches. It's boring as heck at the moment to be in the metaverse. I mean, we'll see if that ever changes, but I've been there and Lord, there's like nothing to do. And according to a recent Wall Street Journal article, most users actually leave and don't come back after 30 days. And that actually includes Meta employees themselves. In fact, most of the worlds have never been visited that have been created by users. Some of them have had less than 50 users. They were targeting to have 500,000 by the end of the year. They lowered that to 280. They're sitting at around 200,000 right now, so we'll see if they hit that. But quite frankly, this is really not where they were thinking this was going to be. I mean, the next big thing that they had after users were complaining was Mark Zuckerberg excitedly came out and said, yes, now all of our avatars will have legs. That really doesn't solve stuff, Mark. But let's talk about that, because CEO Mark Zuckerberg really does want to become our digital cyber overlord here in virtual reality. And he is spending billions basically trying to make that happen. The initial investment of $10 to $12 billion for the reality labs is quite frankly not paying off, which is why they've lost something like 60% of the overall value of Facebook, aka Meta, this year, as he is really trying to push away from this. And that has caused a whole bunch of other problems as well. But here's the thing. Like Facebook, the metaverse is free for the most part, and I'll get to that. And you're basically going to be data mined in exchange basically for advertising and all of that to have it free. But you're going to be data mined in a plethora of new ways here. Now, this goes above and beyond the way Facebook is currently data mining you. So they're looking at everything that you post and they're analyzing it. They're looking at what you're sharing to see, you know, what your interests are or if you lean right or left politically, you know, all these kinds of things so that they can sell all of this information to advertisers. It's even to the point where if you linger over, you know, basically an ad, like let's say you're interested in this widget or whatever, and you take 10 seconds to read the ad and then move on, they understand that. Now you start getting more of those ads. These are the kinds of things that we are talking about. Now, when it comes to the metaverse, in order to get the full virtual reality experience, users have to basically put on virtual reality or VR headsets, not to mention gloves and everything else. And as we are finding out, these units are basically the next frontier of privacy issues that we're going to have with big tech. We are data mined to the nth degree. These VR headsets are now turning it up to 11. Like I said, Meta isn't alone in this, and we will talk about 2023's possible privacy nightmare that people don't expect, and that would be Apple. Yes, iPhone maker Apple. We'll talk about them as well. But first, we're going to talk about Meta, again, the biggest player in town. Now, this is actually, part of this is based, and I literally just did a video on this a video/podcast a few days before this broadcast, you know, which obviously is the beginning of the week of the 17th of October, on this thing. So I cribbed that heavily and I took my notes from that. But some of this is based off of a Wired article by Kari Johnson, who I thought did a really good job of laying all of this out. Now, here's what's going on. Meta just introduced its latest VR headset in the last week or so, as you're listening to this, known as the Quest Pro. This is about $1,500 for the record, which is why, even though the Horizons, New Horizons, the Metaverse by Facebook might be free to use, you have to pay to play to get the actual virtual reality. Now, the new model of the Quest Pro, adds a set of 5 inward-facing cameras that watch your face so they can do things like track your eye movement and facial expressions, allowing then your avatar to basically look like you, reflecting what you're doing. So if you're smiling or sad or raising an eyebrow, winking, all those things, your avatar will do that as well. Now, the headset also has 5 exterior cameras that will in the future help give your avatar legs that copy the person's movement in the real world. Think about all of that information they're collecting. Now, basically, at the event that announced this new headset, Mark Zuckerberg, as I mentioned, the CEO, Meta CEO, described the intimate new data collection that is basically a necessary part of his vision for virtual reality. And I quote Mr. Zuckerberg, "When we communicate, all our nonverbal expressions and gestures are often even more important than what we say, and the way we connect virtually needs to reflect that too." Now, companies including Amazon and various research projects have previously used conventional photos of faces to try and predict a person's emotional state, despite a lack of evidence that the technology can actually work. And I actually did a deep dive on Amazon on this, not to mention countless videos and podcasts and all that stuff in my daily life, where Amazon was trying to sell facial recognition technology that could identify emotion to the police. So think about this. Let's say for a moment you get scared and you run from the police and the police are chasing you and the officer has augmented reality glasses. And let's say you turn around, but you don't put your hands up. And let's say you are terrified. You are frightened. You're not aggressive. You're just frightened. What happens when the AI reads your face and says, oh, this person is aggressive, and that gives the police officer justification, let's say, to pull out a gun and shoot you to protect himself? These are the things that we are talking about. But when we are in the metaverse, they are collecting all of this information, one, to make our avatars look like us more, but two, to actually collect data that can be sold and used essentially against us or to advertise to us. Now, data from Meta's new headset might provide a fresh way to infer your interests or reactions to content, meaning they show you that ad and your eyes light up like, holy cow, that's really cool. Like, I can't afford that car, but, that's pretty awesome. Now they've got you. Now they see this above and beyond you just glancing or lingering for two more seconds on an ad as you scroll through your day. The company is experimenting with shopping in virtual reality because, of course, they are. And they have basically filed patents that envision personalized ads in the metaverse, just like we get personalized ads on Facebook, as well as media content that adapts in response to the person's facial expressions. So even as you are looking at this, let's say it's a video of, cute little puppies playing around and it warms your heart. They understand that. Or you watch something scary that increases your heart rate. They can start to understand these as your pupils dilate. Now, in a briefing with journalists about a week or two ago, Meta product manager Nick Ontiveros said that the company does not use that information to predict emotions. But here, let's talk about this. Raw images and pictures used to power these features are stored on the headset itself, processed locally on the device, and deleted after processing. That is according to Meta. But, this is a huge thing. Eye tracking, and I will quote Wired directly. I've been paraphrasing. I will quote Wired directly. Eye tracking and facial expression privacy notices the company published this week state that although raw images get deleted, insights gleaned from those images may be processed and stored in Meta's servers. That data on a Quest Pro's user's face and eye movements can also be broadcast to companies beyond Meta. A new movement SDK or software development kit will grant developers outside the company access to abstracted gaze and facial expression data to animate avatars and characters. Meta's privacy policy for its headset says that data shared with outside services, quote, will be subject to their own terms and privacy policies. So essentially what they are doing is giving themselves a loophole. This is the same thing that Apple did with Face ID. They said, well, we're not selling the picture of your face to third parties. We're selling the dots that make up your face so that they can improve their own facial recognition. And so as we are looking at this, we have ways of being re-identified as we are being de-identified, meaning if you have specific characteristics for yourself. So, for example, you can identify people, on video cameras as they're walking down the street by their gait, meaning the way that they walk. If you have facial expressions, maybe you have a nervous tic, maybe you squint all the time for whatever reason, your face is wholly yours. The expressions that come from your face are wholly yours. And so that means that if I have a series of characteristics on user 17264, and I can put all of those things together, I can then de-identify user 12764 and essentially identify as who they are, identify them as who they are. This is what we are talking about. And so they are looking at getting into the emotional intelligence side of the game above and beyond just you reading information or watching a video as you are scrolling through Facebook, which again, they glean a ton of information on you, regarding that. Not to mention, as they are looking at this and understanding your emotional expressions, can they start mentally diagnosing you? Meaning, well, psychologically, this person seems to react in this way, so this person is depressed, this person is not depressed, this person is a psychopath, whatever it is. This is what we're talking about. These are the kinds of things that we are giving essentially the largest data miner in the world, because they want all of us to basically be in this ecosystem. If you've ever seen the movie WALL-E, it's essentially like that. We're all strapped into VR helmets. We are all basically in this amazing virtual universe, and the rest of the world basically just goes to pot. Here we are. It is one of the ultimate distractions. I have no idea why I would want to strap on goggles and all these different kinds of things if I just wanted to have, a 10-minute meeting on something like Zoom or Microsoft Teams. Now, I can see practical needs for this, let's say in architecture or design. Imagine having that virtual building there. Everybody can put on VR goggles and actually walk through the building, see the layout, kind of get a better sense for it than you could like on an architectural design. But that's one case, out of a million. And so this is a huge thing. And this isn't, I think, the same as like at the dawn of like text messaging, where people were like, oh, yes, well, it's so hard to text because we had numeric keypads back then. We didn't have smartphones. But as smartphones and keyboards became adaptive, we all got into texting, just like we all moved into social media, in the late 2000s, early 2010s. This is basically the expectation. And so people have been buying virtual space in the metaverse to try and corner the market, but it's just not there. This requires a lot more involvement, and the technology that we wear to get into the metaverse obviously is a huge issue because, one, it's bulky. Two, you can't really walk down the street with it, and organizations are working on augmented reality. That's one of the things Apple is working on. We'll talk about that in a second here, but it's not quite the same. And so this is what we are talking about. This is the next frontier of digital privacy, and understand. And if you are in the metaverse, specifically Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse, you are going to be data mined to the nth degree. I can't speak for the other metaverses out there, but we do have to talk about Apple, because Apple, basically, for all of their marketing on how secure and private they are, oftentimes are anything but. And a lot of people don't really understand this. Did you know that they were selling your mapping data from Face ID and, from their Face ID system? Or did you hear it here for the first time a couple minutes ago? These are what we're talking about. This is the stuff that flies under the radar that I think is so important that everybody knows. And with that, let's talk about an article that just came out in the Daily Star, who's out of the UK, by author Ciaran Daly, or Dolly, because this is so unbelievably important. And here's what's going on with Apple. They are rumored to be working on a virtual reality or mixed reality, meaning augmented reality or virtual reality headset for next year, 2023, which will ask users to scan their eyeballs to log in, pay for things, and use apps. Now, this iris scanning technology will also allow users to easily switch between user profiles, enabling different people to share the same headset with ease, meaning, as my eyes move to get, more information, it's going to recognize, oh, somebody else is wearing the glasses, therefore user two is using them and I'm user one, or vice versa, all those kinds of things. In other words, basically, this rumor technology would work just like the existing Face ID or Touch ID to unlock tools, in your augmented reality glasses, or if paired with your iPhone, obviously would unlock your iPhone in the same way that a smartwatch from Apple can do that. Now, Apple has not, for the record, officially confirmed whether it is working on a VR or mixed reality known as XR headset, which basically has been on track to be revealed for next year. However, according to the publication, the information, two Apple insiders claim that they actually helped develop the headset, and they say that it will feature this iris scanning technology. Now, there's no word yet on how this feature would affect user interactions with content on the headset beyond unlocking it, although an eye tracking feature could be very useful for generating analytics data on user engagement or even controlling the headset itself. In other words, if they are grabbing these analytics, this is stuff that they can record on you in the same way that even if they're not recording your face completely, they are recording all of the points and mapping that make up your face. This is the same thing. If I can share these glasses with, let's say, somebody else, and it understands that this is a new user, not me, it has to understand my unique signatures and identities that make up my iris. Eye scanning is another biometric that, like a fingerprint, is wholly unique to you. Your eyes will never be the same as mine. My eyes will never be the same as anybody else's, and that goes for everybody on the planet. Now, based on past patents that Apple has filed, they've been actually playing and toying with virtual reality for almost 2 decades, and they are very much expected to announce a headset that works with both augmented and virtual reality. Now, according to Bloomberg's Mark Gurman, who, for the record, has provided reliable information on iPhone launches in the past, claims that this headset is due out for a 2023 release date, probably later in 2023. That's usually when Apple launches stuff. Now, it will likely have an app store specifically for the headset, because obviously, you know, if you've got virtual reality situations, then you're going to have different sets of games. It'll be a different feel to watch videos, not to mention things like FaceTime might be in virtual reality as well. And Apple reportedly demonstrated their preliminary tech to their board members in May of this year. So this is coming. This is not something that we are looking at here and saying, oh yes, well, this is, you know, no big deal or whatever. This is a huge, huge thing. And the privacy implications for this are absolutely crazy. Now,
and thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.